Welcome into another edition of the Dane and Victory podcast, only available on musketeerreport.com. I am Rick. He is Dan. And Dan, it's 8 week. Big week. Big week for X.
Yeah, that kind of got a life of its own, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we have to address this. And here's the dilemma I face. The last podcast we did, we got off the rails quickly. We never got back on track. It was absolute trash. Now, here we are, and I'm about to bring up something called Corn Sword. And so I'm a little tentative to do so, but we have to address it because it's the elephant in the room, and everyone wants me to address it. So what were you doing to these people in Iowa?
There were actual people that asked you to address that nonsense?
Dan, I think there will be an angry Twitter mob if I do not ask you to explain what is going on with you and the Northern Iowa fans right now on social media.
All right. So, well, first of all, here's the weirdest thing, is that I have gotten tweeted at by one Northern Iowa fan since this whole thing started, and that guy was just kind of like, hey, you know that Northern Iowa is in Cedar Falls, not Cedar Rapids, right? And I was like, no, I didn't know that.
People forget that.
People do forget that, specifically me. So yeah, I got schooled on the geography of Iowa, but that's about as far as it's gone.
That's pretty intense hate.
Yeah, I mean, so it just is like it's a scheduling quirk, and everyone knew that there was a possibility that this was going to happen, that X was going to end up playing Northern Iowa twice in a row. I think this has happened a couple times in the past, right? Because I remember Xavier played Tennessee regular season, and then in Atlantis, I think, in that debacle within a week and a half.
Right, but it's never been, like, back-to-back like this, has it?
No. And then they also played Long Beach, I think, in another debacle early season tournament 1 year where they played them at home and then played them, like, a week later. But this is the first time it's ever been back-to-back games. And it's just weird because it's Northern Iowa, and it's like here's this kind of random school that I don't think Xavier's ever played before. You know, a program that I think you and I both have a lot of respect for. I mean, they're really good every year. They've had some, like, awesome moments in the past, like Ali Farouk Manesh hitting that shot against Kansas, et cetera. So the whole thing just seemed kind of silly. And so I'm sitting there in my house on, like, Saturday morning, and they were starting to hype the Ohio State-Michigan game on ESPN because they're doing game day there. And EDSBS and some of the college football writers, they'll call it hate week when they have their big rivalry week, like Florida, Georgia, or whatever. So I decided to make a big clown show of myself by hyping up this long-held rivalry between Xavier and Northern Iowa. So that's where it began. And so I posted a bunch of really lame rips on Northern Iowa while at the same time pretending like I was just dishing out the most devastating burns imaginable. This is because I'm a moron, and as you know, I have a very bizarre sense of humor. So ultimately, Saturday evening, I got some good response from it. A lot of people were tweeting at me because they were kind of in on the joke. And so I was going to the movies, and I got to the movie theater way early. I was meeting my sister, so I went to the bar next door to have a beer. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, you know what? This needs a trophy. We need a trophy for this massive rivalry. Because, you know, like the Big Ten schools, when they play football, they all kinds of hillbilly knickknacks exchange hands, like a pig, and the Ohio State and Illinois play for a giant turtle or there's a jug involved in one of the games. And so I came up with the corn sword, and I drew it on the back of a bar receipt and figured everybody would get a laugh out of it. And then somebody else on Twitter, Norwood Hardwood, I'll give them credit, like actually went into like a graphic design thing. They must have been having a slow Saturday night or it had like 8 beers and we're just primed for some kind of nonsense. And they actually mocked it up, and I think it's hilarious. And it apparently has infiltrated certain portions of the Xavier blogosphere. I had a DM, I hope I'm not giving too much away, from Cliff Jenkins, Xavier's multimedia guy, asking what the hell I was talking about. And then Shannon Russell got wind of it, and people have been having some fun with it, I guess. But yeah, the corn sword, and the teams will be fighting for the corn sword on Saturday afternoon. That's part of it too, is that the game takes place at the exact same time as Ohio State Michigan. So
which you're appreciative of.
Yeah, you know.
Shout out to Mario.
I mean, I'm not a huge Ohio State fan, but I grew up following them, and I always watched this game, so it's kind of weird that this game is being played at the same time, but whatever. So that's how it came about. So that's a lot more that's really boring and not in any way crazy, and the furor seems to have died down. But I will say there is something about, like, there's something about the internet when you post something that may go, that you think might go viral, and then you're like, or like I was, you're at the movie, and then you get out of the movie and you check your phone, you've got like 35 Twitter notifications. There's a moment of just panic, like have I opened the gates of hell here? So happily, everybody seems to have taken it pretty non-seriously, and there hasn't been anybody from Cedar Falls who's been too offended. So,
well,
hopefully Xavier will retain the corn sword and add that to their bulging trophy case after Saturday.
Yeah, so I have two things, starting with, I don't want to give too much away either or throw anyone under the bus, but a fellow Xavier writer also slid up in my DMs and was asking me, before saying anything about the corn sword, whether or not it was another one of our weird sex things on this podcast. And I think it's unfair that that's what we're known for. I don't think we have many weird sex things on this podcast.
I don't think we ever have made anything that, I mean.
I agree. I think I've made one statement about one specific person that works at Xavier, and it wasn't that risque. And now that's what we're known for, apparently.
Well, I mean, honestly, this is pretty low. We are like low to medium brow at best, so.
Yeah, and that being said, corn sword does sound kind of weirdly sexual. I
guess
that.
Well, that was part of why it was fun. That was part of why I thought it was funny. So.
Yeah, no question. I figured as much. The second thing, you kind of mentioned, like, the weird moments you have on Twitter. It always surprises me, like, when it doesn't. I shouldn't say surprise me, but like, it's always a fun and interesting thing for me to find out, like, which players have this weird, like, cult following in their communities, their high school communities, where they came from, their hometowns. And I just found that out for Quentin Gooden. After he did that dunk and I tweeted like a little video of it, the thing's got like 200 retweets right now. And so it's just like a ton of people from Taylor County just banging the retweet button on that, which is, it's always funny which guy like has that following.
I mean, Taylor County, that's pretty off the beaten path. Do they produce a lot of D1 guys, or is he like the biggest thing that's come out of there?
No, I mean, he was playing with
memory.
Like four other, I mean, he had David Sloan, who somehow ended up there as well, and has now moved on and transferred. So that gave them another D1 player at the same time as Quentin, but like, I think Sloan was kind of there to play with Quentin. Aside from that, they played with like three other white guys that were under 5'5" at all times, I think. So, yeah, I mean.
But I have to say that
they play multiple Team Wolves per year, Dan.
Yeah, Caverna is on the schedule.
Yeah.
In fact, I think that's where I heard of Caverna the first time was they were playing Taylor County.
Yeah, I think I tweeted that score out, and that's when you asked about Teen Wolves.
So the funny thing is, I will admit that, like, just sort of like self-aggrandizingly, I did watch a lot of the periscopes that Cliff and some other people from Xavier were putting out after the championship game against Northern Iowa to see if anybody mentioned the corn sword. A little bit disappointed. I guess it hasn't. It didn't have the kind of social media penetration that I thought it was going to have. So.
Wait, you wanted like Makira, like after he got his all tournament team trophy, to like mention the corn sword? Is that what you were thinking was going to happen?
Well, I thought maybe a fan would show up with like a husk of corn and then just like jam a knife through it or something like that, just for comedy's sake.
And
you
you guys thought I was an idiot when I said Woj would be posting my picture in their locker room when they come to the Cintas Center. This is dumber than that.
No, I may have overestimated how viral this was going to go. I will be honest. I figured it would have gotten bigger than it was by now, just because of how unbelievably stupid it was. But I guess we've seen what the full extension of my social media might is, and it's not much.
Well, you've heard it, Xavier Nation, Slime Nation. You have work to do on social media. It's hate week.
Maybe if I send a bunch of insulting tweets to Trump, he'll retweet me, and I'll get like 100,000.
He'll build you the most opulent trophy you've ever seen.
I mean, he could probably make that happen.
He'll build it faster and cheaper. Hashtag cornsword. So anyway, let's get into Xavier won the Tire Pros Invitational. You know that I've written about it. I've talked about it with Richard Skinner and Chad Brendel. Dan, give me anything that jumps out to you from that tournament right now. What was kind of your takeaway from the weekend?
Well, I guess the problem is that you, because of your expanded podcast network now,
yeah,
you produce so many takes that I feel like most of what I want to say you've already said. So I almost feel like I'm taking like the day after take and throwing it in the microwave. And you know, it's just kind of.
But what you have to understand is there's a lot of people who won't tolerate 30 minutes of UC talk on a podcast, and they're just hearing us for the first time too. So there's that.
Fair enough. I mean, the amount of slurping of Jacob Evans on that last podcast, it got a little bit out of hand. but I will say, I guess what stood out to me was that X helped themselves. It was kind of, I think I made the point on the message board, and I stand by this, that it was kind of an ideal trip in a lot of ways for Xavier. Even though they played terribly against Missouri. They got away with it. They didn't suffer a bad loss that's just going to linger around for the rest of the season and is going to be a constant blot on their tournament resume, like, say, Hawaii to Holloway's senior year. Or, you know, maybe like a UTEP, the year they lost to them in the early season tournament. They didn't take a bad loss, so that's good. That's sort of like that gets you to the D-minus, the gentleman's passing grade. But then, you know, they get two wins over teams in Clemson and Northern Iowa that are pretty good, that are top 100. I mean, Northern Iowa's probably a top 75 type team. Clemson might be a top half of the ACC team, might be an NCAA tournament team. I think they got a pretty good shot at that. So you get two pretty good wins. They did it with a depleted roster, as we know. They did it facing a lot of adversity, which we'll talk about. We'll talk about some of the problems that they had during the tournament. And they come back. They're 5-0. They don't have any blemishes on their record. They play pretty well. They're in pretty good shape. Their resume looks good, and there's plenty of stuff for the coaches to work on. There's no worry that this team is going to come back and say, "Oh, we're 5-0. We got it all figured out." Last year, when they went down to Orlando and just wiped the floor with two NCAA tournament teams and a third that was a bubble team. You could see the head starting to expand a little bit, and I think it wasn't until they narrowly escaped from Wake Forest and then got whacked at Villanova that they kind of got refocused. So I'm kind of thinking that this is a good thing for the team altogether. Gives them a lot of stuff to work on, and you know, unlike a lot of seasons, Xavier's got guys coming back. They've got additional pieces that are coming in off the horizon. Are on the horizon that should help them in a lot of the areas where they struggled. So it was a good trip.
Do you think pollsters feel stupid? Should they feel stupid for dropping Xavier four spots or whatever it was after a narrow win over Lehigh to open the season?
I don't really care. I know that a lot of the people, especially the people that vote in the media poll, they do pay attention to the game and they try to inform themselves. But quite honestly, the country is too big. There's too many teams out there. It's too early in the season for anybody who's just making a top 25, a media poll, to be really accurate. And the coaches' polls are done by, you know, the SID or whoever happens into the coach's office on, you know, 10 minutes before the deadline to submit the poll. So I'm more interested in what the computer rankings are showing. And I think where they are right now, I think 16 in Pomeroy, I think if you look at the Massey composites, they're like 10. If you average out all the different systems, Sagarin's got to maybe like 20 or 21. I think that's about right at this point for what actually Xavier has produced on the court. So I don't care that much about the human polls, but the computer rankings seem to have them in a good spot.
Well, I guess I just, to me, it says something because the writers don't typically rank a team in the top 10 preseason. have them win a game to start the season, regardless of what that result is, have them win, and then drop them four spots. To me, it says, like, a lot of those people voting for Xavier to be a preseason top 10 team didn't really believe they were a preseason top 10 team if they're going to drop them four spots for a win. So I just thought it was interesting. And then you see them win three games, and honestly, they look pretty impressive despite the fact that they're not playing all that well. I would imagine some of them were like, well, that was kind of dumb. So Xavier moved up like another spot or two in both the polls. But anyway, let's get, you know, we're through five games now. You mentioned kind of taking inventory of where things are at and some of the struggles that this team has had. They're 14th in offensive efficiency in the country, 25th in defensive efficiency, according to KenPom. Dan, if I asked you what is the biggest issue this team is facing right now, what are you going to tell me?
I think that there are four issues with the team in no particular order. One is point guard play has been, not that Edmund has been bad necessarily, but that he hasn't quite been, I guess we're so used to point guards like a Samaje or a D or two Holloway, Drew Lavender going back through the years, that really were floor generals, and Edmund isn't really there yet. So that's one issue. The second issue is three-point shooting. They just haven't shot the ball very well, and they certainly haven't shot it consistently. I mean, in two of the five games, they've been absolutely terrible from three-point. So those are two. Third is closing out games, which is an issue I think we've talked about a couple of times. Too many turnovers, too many missed foul shots, some confusion generally about how to handle things down the stretch. And that kind of is a carryover from last year when we saw that happen a couple times down the stretch for Xavier, particularly in the Wisconsin game where they really lost their edge in the last 4 to 5 minutes of that game. They kind of became tentative and confused and weren't as effective as they had been all season. And then the fourth thing is just foul trouble, especially with the bigs. I think in every single game in the tournament in Orlando, Xavier had issues with big men being in foul trouble, having to cobble together lineups. You saw Tyreek foul out in 9 minutes in one of the games. Rashid and Sean both getting two fouls really early against Mizzou. I think they both had two fouls in the first half against Northern Iowa. I may be mistaken on that. So those are the four big issues. But the nice thing about that is that I feel like if those are your four issues, if those are the things you can point to as you come out of things at the end of November, there's a pretty good chance that all four of those things are fixable. It's not like this team is like, let's say, Xavier 3 or 4 years ago when we could see from the outset that they had a problem with defending the wing because they had slow-footed, because they had Stainbrook and Fillmore that were playing that were both slow-footed, Justin Martin, not a great defender, where you just knew that this was going to be a problem they were going to get picked on all year long. With Xavier right now, with those four issues that we just mentioned, I think all of them are fixable. I don't think any of them are, like, obviously exploitable, especially obviously exploitable for Big East teams. So, I mean, I guess I would rather have the problems Xavier has now than the ones that they could have.
Yeah, I think that's very well said. I have some numbers to kind of to run by you here at through five games, and obviously in some cases we're dealing with very small sample sizes. Things can be skewed weirdly because of a certain opponent or whatever, a certain style that you faced. That can certainly impact these numbers more than it should at this point. But Xavier's 299th in the country right now in three-point percentage, shooting 28%. Obviously, you would expect that number to get a lot better. The thing I like about their their perimeter play right now is I think they're taking the right shots. Trey's been very aggressive. JP's been very aggressive. Edmund, I think, has been the right amount of aggressive in terms of how many threes he's taken. At times, and we talked about this a little bit on the podcast on Monday, I think he's looked at situations where teams are playing off of him. He's not getting the looks that he's wanted because they're being a little impatient. They're not finding that flow offensively. And then he's kind of taken some out of rhythm threes that have looked awkward. And those he's just not shooting with enough confidence for my liking. But in terms of how many he shot, I'm fine with that. And then Malcolm Bernard's been their most consistent 3-point shooter. And he's 5 of 13 right now, which is better than I would have expected from him, and he's taking the exact shots you want him taking. The Remy Abel threes, basically, the wide open and transition three, and then kind of the kick out threes where they're swinging the ball around, and he's kind of the last guy that has the open look. Those are the exact shots you want him taking, and he's making them at a proper clip. He has to lower his turnover rate. That's been his biggest issue. I think he's kind of been unsung because his numbers, he's not producing a whole lot. He's not rebounding as well as I thought he would. But he's playing well. He's not getting beat off the dribble defensively. I think defensively, after watching some film, he may be over-helping. He's giving up a lot of threes where he's just late to recover. And it's situations a lot of times where he's making the right read in terms of he has to help somebody else and hold for him for a second. But sometimes he's just completely kind of switching and guarding that man and not kind of just discouraging a pass to that guy and recovering quickly to his own man. And so he has to get a little more comfortable within the system, but those are all very correctable things. The big thing is physically he matches up well. He's able to guard point guards. He's able to guard big wings like Jeremy Morgan. He's done a great job of being the versatile defender that this team needed. And then in addition, when you have Edmund at 6'6", you have JP at 6'5", you have Malcolm at 6'6", you've really upgraded the size of your perimeter defense when you had, you know, Miles at 6'1", 6'2", and kind of short and not very quick last year. And then you had Remy at 6'4", who's a very good defender, but still not quite as long as the two guys you're playing now. Your defense is so long on the perimeter. I think that's really helped this team so far.
Yeah, and I think this is one of those things that you look down the road to where this team could be, let's say in February, and you think when they need a stop, when they have a big possession, the flexibility to have, say, Ed, you could have Ed, Quentin, Malcolm, Kaiser, and then a big on the floor, and you've got plus length, plus quickness at every single one of those spots. That becomes a very difficult lineup to deal with. If you're an opposing team and you need a bucket, and Xavier can run out a lineup like that, man, that's a tough ask.
Yeah, and I think the bigs have been better than expected defensively. I think they've been very solid in that regard. They're being tried a lot more than last year's team was. The opponents are going after them, thinking they're the weak link. But in terms of like points per possession, they're not giving up really any more than they were last season. Xavier's man-to-man defense, they're playing at 87.2% of the time right now, giving up 0.079 points per possession, 39.5%
really,
shooting from the field. It's outstanding.
That's really good.
Yeah, it's outstanding.
That's really good. And I think they've done a nice job of controlling the glass, too. I mean, they haven't gotten killed on offensive rebounds, which against a team like, say, Northern Iowa is can be problematic, you know, because they take so many threes, they take so many shots from way outside the arc that it's going to lead to a lot of long rebounds. And that did happen. That caught up with them a couple times in that final on Sunday night. But for the most part, Xavier controlled the glass against Northern Iowa. I think they only out-rebounded him by 4 or 5. But
I think it was 9-3 in second-chance points.
Yeah, they didn't allow them to dominate second-chance points. When you look at overall for the season, they're at an offensive rebound percentage defensively of 23.6%, which is 55th in the country, which is pretty good, especially when you think about, you know, playing against some teams that like to gun from the outside. So yeah, I mean, I think it's been a pretty good start. I mean, one of the interesting things is when you look at 3-point attempts as a function of field goal attempts. So Xavier only 31% of Xavier's field goal attempts so far this season have been threes, which is pretty low, 281. Their opponents are taking 45% of their field goal attempts from beyond the arc, which to a certain extent is a function of the pack line, but even that number is crazy. It's ranked 330th by KenPom, which means there's only like a handful of teams that are giving up more 3-point attempts than Xavier is. That is not going to change, obviously, against Northern Iowa because they're going to be jacking up threes on Saturday. But yeah, I mean, that's a little ominous because that means that if a team does get hot, X could be in real trouble. But But it demonstrates that they're doing a nice job on the defensive glass to keep that offensive rebound percentage that low despite giving up that percentage of three-point attempts.
Yeah, and Dan, let's face it. I mean, that's something we've talked about since we've been doing this podcast, is that that is a big function of the pack line defense, is it's going to really sell out to eliminate box touches and keep the ball out of the lane. And in return, at times you're going to give up kick-out threes, which we've always seen. The thing is, Xavier's doing a good enough job of recovering that teams aren't shooting too high of a percentage against them right now from three-point range, and that's including a few teams shooting it pretty well. So, you know, the one thing is, you mentioned the fouling earlier and how they kind of needed to tone that down. When they've fouled, they've had to switch to that 1-3-1 zone. I don't think Chris has wanted to go to it in the games that he's gone to it because they've been doing so well man-to-man. But in the 1-3-1, they've been playing it 12.8% of the time, so it's a really small sample size still, so these stats aren't great. But they're giving up 1.01 points per possession, giving up 50% shooting from the field. So obviously, 1-3-1 hasn't been getting it done with this group. They're, you know, people have brought up they're not as long in the middle without James and Jalen. I think there's a few different things going on. They are longer on the perimeter, so you would think that would help a lot with the zone, but... For one, they haven't played great personnel that you would want to run the 1-3-1 against. I mean, you don't want to play at all against Northern Iowa.
They're not using they have not used so far this season the 1-3-1 as a weapon. They have used it as to protect players.
Exactly.
And
right.
to manage their way through portions of the game and to basically kill clock and manage a few minutes here and there, where they need to keep guys from getting a fourth foul or from fouling out of the game. So it's a different thing from last year, when sometimes they would put that 1-3-1 out there and they would have an ideal personnel group to play the 1-3-1, and they would do it as an attack mechanism against teams, especially teams that didn't shoot the three very well or that really lived off of penetration, and that would curtail that to a certain extent. Also, a lot of teams that just hadn't scouted it and weren't ready for it. This year, I don't think that they're using – I think, first of all, the fact they're playing it 12% of the time, which is, 6 minutes a game, that's probably much higher than they would want to. They probably anticipated using it for a possession here, a possession there. So I think the foul trouble is the reason why they've had to deploy it that much. And it doesn't surprise me that it hasn't been that good because, frankly, it's not ideal for the – it doesn't leverage – the best qualities of the guys that are currently playing on the team. Now, when you get Kaiser back, maybe that changes a little bit, because I think that you can come up with a personnel group to play the 1-3-1 that's going to be more effective. But yeah, right now they're using it as a Band-Aid.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's very well said. Just a few more numbers to throw at you. We've obviously talked a lot about the post play. Again, I think they've been a little bit better than expected. They're not being used nearly in the same way that last year's big men were being used for. I mean, they're not throwing the ball to them as much on offense. They're not trying to play through them really at all. They're just kind of they're guys that are there to drop it off to when someone drives, or occasionally Mac will run a set where, you know, it calls for a quick Tyreek Jones duck in and a dunk like we saw against Northern Iowa, or it calls for that little cross screen play that they've run several times and gotten for dunks. But they're averaging 5.8 points per game in post-up situations right now. They're using 6.8 possessions per game in post-up situations and averaging 0.853 points per possession in those situations. So pretty good numbers in comparison to last year with James and Jalen and a little bit of Sean O'Mara. They averaged 8.2 points per game last year, but that was on 9.2 possessions used per game.
Do you have those statistics from Stainbrook senior year? That'd be the interesting.
I didn't have them caught up for this. But last year they averaged 0.885 points per possession. So this year 0.853, last year 0.885. Not a huge separation in terms of efficiency and how they're scoring when they do throw it into the post. So I think those guys are doing a pretty good job, particularly the Rashid Gaston. I mean, he's as advertised. He hasn't played as many minutes as we expected this early on. He's maybe not scoring quite as much, but he's rebounding at a high rate on both ends of the court. He's playing good defense. He needs to make free throws. But other than that, I think he's been exactly as advertised.
I agree. And actually, he's not shooting that poorly from free throw line. I mean, he's 12 of 18, which isn't ideal, but but high 60%, 70% from a post guy, I'm not going to complain too much about.
I actually think I guess I said that because I feel like he's a better free throw shooter than that.
Yeah, I mean, well, you've seen him play a lot more than I have, but I would say that the one thing Rashid has done is he's really rebounded the ball well. You know, very high offensive rebound, defensive rebound rate, both of which are critical. Actually, Sean has been really good at gathering offensive rebounds and getting second-chance points as well. So those two guys have really done a nice job. But when you look at the KenPom statistics, they have the fouls committed per 40 minutes statistic. So Sean O'Mara is currently committing 6.3 fouls per 40 minutes, which is, you know, a lot, but that'll almost get you – you could play 28 minutes a game at that rate. Rashid's at 8.4 fouls created – or fouls committed per 40 minutes, and Tyreek is at 10. So obviously all those guys, they have been foul-prone. I don't know if that's because the referees are trying to ruin basketball as they do every November, or it's – and I don't imagine that those numbers will be the same once we get into the thick of Big East play. But by the same token, it's obviously been a contributing factor to the struggles Xavier's had in some of these games, because they can't keep these guys on the floor, and they're kind of bailing out the opposition on a lot of possessions that really Xavier should be getting stops on.
Yeah, I think that's the bigger point, is that, one, you are bailing teams out. You're increasing your foul count too quickly, giving them a bunch of free throws at the end of halves, which have helped keep, you know, some of these teams in the game. So that's the bigger issue why these guys need to quit fouling. The thing I'd say is, with Kaiser coming back, you're not really worried about these guys picking up two quick fouls, because you've got three of them for one position. They can all be in foul trouble throughout the game like we've seen, and it really never comes back to matter because – you've got three guys for one position. So, you know, it's just not a huge concern in terms of running out of bodies to play the five. It was a little more of a concern because they were having to play two of them at a time for certain points, if like Trayvon got in foul trouble or anything like that. But once Kaiser gets back, that's not a concern at all. So I really don't think the foul trouble is a very big issue for the bigs. You mentioned the offensive rebounding. You know, this team is averaging 9 points per game right now on stickbacks, on offensive rebounds. Last year, they averaged 8.2 points per game, which I thought was interesting. Now, obviously, it's very early. It's only five games, but just that they're already, you know, outproducing last year's team on the offensive glass was a little bit of a shock to me, considering that was, you know, James was great at getting stickbacks last year, and there were some other guys who did it as well. So I think this team is doing a good job of making up for some of those big question marks that everybody had for them coming into the season.
So then, I guess now would probably be a good time to talk. Just briefly, do you get a sense of Kaiser Gates, where he is, when they think he might be ready to come back?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Chris, he's not going to tell everyone, oh yeah, Kaiser's coming back for this game. You know, I mean, like, he's going to be warming up during the game, and he's going to play all of a sudden, and you're going, oh, okay, this is the game. I really kind of expect it to be this Saturday against Northern Iowa, to be honest. Now, it could be a really tight game, and you may not have a lot of minutes to really kind of feel like you can get him in the flow, so that may prohibit you, because, like, everyone thinks, like, oh, when are we going to get Kaiser back so he can get back in there and, like, start for us or whatever? And right now, you're playing well, and he hasn't practiced and played with anyone and seen live action in over a couple months. So I don't know that sticking him in is like the answer to all of your problems. I think you have to work him in and get him up to speed once he's ready. So I think he's ready for Saturday against Northern Iowa. I don't know if he'll play or how much he'll play if he does. But then the next game, Tuesday, against North Dakota State, I think that's almost a certainty where you'll see him really start to get worked back into the mix, because, you know, North Dakota State, not a bad team by any stretch of the imagination, but a team that you would hope Xavier would kind of cruise and be able to pull away from.
So moving to some of the other issues that we talked about at the top of the show, three-point shooting, I guess that's been one thing that's been a little bit surprising from this team. You know, Trayvon so far this year is 8 of 33 for 24%. JP is 10 of 30 for 33%, although he's obviously had some periods where he got red hot. Edmund 1 of 11 for 9%. You mentioned Malcolm was better than expected. But those are really your three guys on the current roster that are going to be taking a lot of threes, Edmund, JP, and Trayvon, and none of them are really hitting. I would expect these guys, at least JP and Trayvon, to be closer to 40% for the season. And Edmund, you know, while not a shooter of their caliber, you would certainly expect him to be 33 to 35% as well. So this is kind of an issue for Xavier. I don't know. I mean, maybe it's – I hesitate to say this, but this season has been a little bit different because Xavier didn't really get that much run at home. The Buffalo game was so chaotic and so many fouls. It was just kind of never really any kind of rhythm involved in that. So they've only played one normal home game to this point. So maybe it's just a matter of these guys just need to get used to the rims and get into a rhythm. But that's obviously a big issue. But, you know, there's an issue that will be ameliorated at least a little bit when Miles Davis comes back, because we all know what kind of shooter Miles Davis is.
Yeah, I think there's a few things going on. One is that they don't have the best chemistry and ball movement yet right now. I mean, they're scoring in isolations. They're scoring on offensive rebounds. They're scoring, on JP getting hot and just burying threes, heat check threes. They're not getting a lot of those really pretty possessions that we saw a lot last year where it's, you know, guy drives, swings it across the baseline to someone in the corner who then passes it to the wing, then to the top of the key, and then the other wing, and then it's a three where it's just like unbelievable ball movement, and they're in a rhythm, and they just look so comfortable out there. We just haven't seen that yet. And I think that will really help when they get to that point where everyone understands the flow and, you know, Malcolm gets involved with that. Because, like, right now Malcolm's kind of caught in this. He's a role player and he's barely being used at all, and he still wants to try to make some plays, so he looks to drive because that's his strength. And he can do a lot of things, and he's a good passer, but I just don't think he's fully comfortable. I don't think the other guys are fully comfortable in how he's going to work with them. You know, Miles is obviously kind of that guy for them. He was very good at moving the ball and just being such a knockdown shooter that you take him out, and it definitely changes up the feel. And you've got JP. I mean, JP's out here trying to get buckets. He's got a heavy usage rate. All these guys have upped their usage rate a little bit, and they're playing a little more in isolation. Now, they've been really effective in isolation, but there just hasn't been that ball movement. So I think that'll be a big part of it. And then the other is they're just slumping. They're not shooting the ball well. And to me, if I'm a Xavier fan, that part would make me giddy, because I'd be like, they won these games, looked okay winning these games. I mean, the Missouri game was bad, obviously, but the Clemson game you have to be really happy with. The Northern Iowa game I think you have to be pretty darn happy with. And they're not shooting well at all. Like, at some point, those guys are going to get hot. There's no question. Like you said, we know the numbers those guys are going to shoot, and they are good numbers. This team will shoot the three-point ball well. So I just said three-point ball, so I should die probably. But
Trayvon,
the point, you know, still stands.
And Trayvon, you know, yeah, his numbers aren't where they need to be at this point, but there's nothing mechanically wrong with his shot. He has looked as good as he's ever looked on mid-range jumpers.
No, and so, like I said, he's taking good shots. It's not like you're like, oh, man, these guys are really forcing or pushing. It's like, no, those are shots that they're going to make. I mean, Trayvon's missed how many wide-open step-in ones that have just kind of rimmed out or whatever. I mean, again, this would make me super excited if I'm a Xavier fan that they didn't struggle despite the fact that they were missing threes, because that would have been my thought. My thought was they'll go to Orlando. They'll really struggle to shoot the ball. They won't have that chemistry yet. They'll still be working through some issues, and they'll get beat by Clemson. And that happened, but they didn't get beat by Clemson, so I'd be really excited if I'm rooting for this team.
The other issue was sort of endgame situations. They got obviously completely bailed out against Missouri with the flying block at the buzzer in overtime, which allowed Edmund to win the game at the line. But there's been – even, you know, against Clemson, they seemed to foul every time Clemson got the ball in the last minute of the game. And instead of kind of what you would have seen the last couple of years, Xavier be up 6 or 7 points with a minute left and then would end up winning by 11 or 12 because they just ice the game at the line. That hasn't really taken place this year. They made some dumb fouls. They've conceded some easy baskets in those sort of frenetic end of game situations. And I know there's been a lot of talk. There was some debate today about, well, when Miles comes back, he'll be running point. Well, that's not going to happen. I mean, Edmund's a point guard on this team. Yeah, but
it didn't happen last year. I don't know what people were talking about. Edmund only played the one last year.
But for the limited purposes of killing off a game when you were up a possession or two in the last 90 seconds or something. Miles Davis is kind of the most critical player, you know, that Xavier has or theoretically could have, because he's automatic at the line. He's got great body control and is really good at getting open to get inbounds passes and drawing fouls. And he is, you know, he's going to be a fifth-year senior who obviously the coaches have a lot of confidence in on the court, maybe off the court. That's a little questionable at this point. But who they have a lot of confidence in on the court. And so I think when Miles gets back, and even before Miles gets totally back into the swing of things, even before he's able to get to play his normal minutes, I think he'll be effective in those situations just because he's got the experience and he's got that skill set that really lends itself to those situations. So I think that's another one of these problems that we've seen so far that is a problem, no question, but is a problem that ought to be fixable.
Well, and I don't think Edmund's like a bad free throw shooter, but he's been missing free throws in those moments, you know. And
my concern with Edmund is more loose passing and offensive fouls in those situations.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say you've had the offensive fouls, you've had the just bizarre possession against Clemson when it was like a minute and a half and they were up by like 9, I think, or something like that, or 7, and he just, like, they're in a zone and he dribbles the ball straight through a couple of guards and all the way out of bounds on the sideline. I mean, just weird things. And there's other possessions where he's stepping on the end line, just not knowing where he is on the court. And it's like, you know, that was stuff that we saw at points last year that I thought would be cleaned up at this point. I'm a little surprised it isn't. But I think at the same time, people are way too down on Edmund's play. Like, he's been pretty darn good. You know, the Clemson game wasn't great for him, but he played a pretty good floor game aside from only scoring 11 points and then the kind of weird plays at the end. So it's been some weird plays from him, some stuff you would hope he would clean up, but like, I don't think they're huge issues. And aside from that, he's still been pretty good. He's the most talented player on the court more often than not. And that's shown up a lot of different times. I mean, he's had some incredible drives to the rims in some of these games.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no doubt about that. So I think that pretty much covers, all the stuff I talked about. I guess the one thing that we still don't have really any definitive answer on is what the situation is with Miles Davis. Are we looking at a Wake Forest return? Are we looking at a return after the new year? And it doesn't seem, I mean, I think with the way Xavier's handled this, which is appropriate, by the way, I mean, this.
Yeah, I don't think Chris wants a definitive.
We're not going to know about it until he's back.
Yeah, I don't think Chris wants a definitive answer out there, to be honest. Now, it might be hard to keep that quiet, like if he gets back to practice and stuff like that. But you know, it is what it is at this point. I'm pretty positive it's going to be end of first semester, and my guess is that means when the first semester ends, if I had to guess. But that's not 100% clear, and it hasn't been made clear to me, but one way or the other. So that's
sure
where we're at.
So at this stage, I guess we look forward at the rest of this non-conference schedule. I mean, this preseason tournament is kind of like the first signpost on the way. Obviously, you've got the Corn Sword rematch on Saturday, North Dakota State, who's a top 100 team, and then the big road trip playing Baylor and Waco. Baylor, who is better, I think, than we expected.
Yeah, can I make a statement about that real quick?
Yeah.
I want to change up my win-loss game. I want to move the loss to Baylor and not Colorado anymore. I think Xavier can handle Colorado.
I think that's wise. Baylor looked extremely good. They just absolutely crushed Oregon, although I'm a little bit down on Oregon.
Yeah, me too. Very much so.
And Colorado, 4-1 so far this season. They lost to Notre Dame on a neutral floor. Did beat Texas, although I'm not sure how big of a deal that is because Texas got slaughtered by Northwestern last night.
But two tough games either way. Baylor and Colorado are both going to be difficult road games.
Oh, yeah, no question about that. But those are both real good opportunities to put something big on the resume. I guess the craziest thing as you look at this is that we thought that those games were going to be tough in non-conference, and we talked about Utah as another potential good non-conference game, and then, of course, UC. But a lot of the other teams on this schedule are better than I think I expected them to be. Wake Forest is sitting 62 in KenPom, which is a lot better than I thought. Utah 52, but North Dakota State, a bye game. They're a top 100 team as of right now. You know, that may change, and obviously their schedule does them not a whole lot of favors after they get past Xavier, but and their ranking has basically been caused by the fact that they've just demolished a bunch of bad teams. But a lot of these teams are showing. Northern Iowa, you would certainly expect to be a resume booster. They still have they have a neutral site game with Iowa, and they play North Carolina away before they start conference play. And then they're going to win a lot of games in the Missouri Valley because really outside of Wichita, that league is trash.
Yeah, I think people thought Northern Iowa might come back to the pack a little bit more, but I think it's the opposite. I think they're closer to Wichita State than they are everybody else in the conference again this year.
That's certainly plausible. And then Wake Forest, you know, as I referenced a second ago, they've started off 4-1. They've been putting a lot of points on the board. They really, you know, their best win is against Bucknell, which isn't much, but they have, or their best win is against College of Charleston, I should say. But they played relatively competitively with Villanova for most of the game they played in that tournament. So, I mean, Wake Forest a little bit better than we expected. And then, and so what you end up with, and then when you look in Big East play, obviously the Big East is off to a great start in non-conference. Creighton has been terrific. They're I believe in the top 10 in one of the polls. Villanova probably the best team in the country right now in my view. And then but Butler, Marquette, Seton Hall, and even Providence have been a lot better than I think was expected early on. Georgetown is still 40th in KenPom.
I don't know about Marquette.
Being shaky. I know your feelings on Marquette, but
but
computer does not lie.
They've lost two games in a row. I mean, and they looked awful in how they lost to Michigan. I don't know that I'm exactly impressed with a win over Vanderbilt. Granted, it was a nice win and a win over Howard.
You're not impressed with a win over Howard?
Yeah, if they pull one out against IUPUI tonight, then maybe I'll change my stance on that. But I might need to see a little bit more from.
I am just looking at the KenPom rankings right now. I'm not casting judgment at this point. I'm not using the eye test. I trust computers.
Right.
But what this boils down to is, if you look at it right now, Xavier's played 5 of the 31 games on their schedule. So they have 26 games left this season, and 23 of them are against teams currently in the top 100 of the Pomeroy rankings. The lone exceptions are the DePaul Browings, who have been terrible. You know, and
let's go Demons.
A little bit of their, they're lost to Rutgers. I mean, that game looked like the most depressing spectacle.
Joe Hanel's turnover rate is just too high for me.
There were like 80 people at the game, and it was like, this is a Gavitt Games extravaganza, DePaul and Rutgers.
If they could get Joe Hanel's turnover rate under control, they'd be fine.
And then the Eastern Washington Fighting Kittens, also.
People forget that he didn't go to Eastern Washington.
I think it makes it more likely that people will forget it if it's not actually factual.
I agree. I tell you what, that you mentioned Creighton. That I think they're a legit top 10 team. Like, I think that's real. Their offense is ranked 6th in the country right now. And I'm telling you what, that might be 2 losses for Xavier in conference play.
I could see Creighton winning the league.
It's an awful matchup for Xavier. I'll say that. Because Mo Watson is the exact type of point guard that gives Xavier tons of trouble.
They have so many offensive weapons.
They do. Cole Huff is, I hate to say it, pretty darn good.
Mad Dog will appreciate that. I can't. The guy's name is escaping me at the moment, but
Isaiah Zierden, Kyrie Thomas.
No, I was thinking of Marcus Foster.
Oh yeah, he's really good.
Season, shooting over 50% from 3, no less. I mean, they got guys coming off the bench, Patton, Thomas, all, you know, just lighting it up right now. You referenced their offensive efficiency, and they're 6th in the country, 4th in effective field goal percentage, and they're shooting as a team 51% from 3-point range.
And they're playing fast, really fast.
Yeah, and they have taken some teams. I mean, they beat Wisconsin. That's a really impressive win in the Gavitt Games. Great atmosphere that game. and got picked up another top 50 win on a neutral site by absolutely hammering NC State in a really ill-tempered matchup that looked like it was going to go to fisticuffs on a couple occasions. And then they beat Ole Miss as well in the final of that exempt field tournament. That's another top 100 win.
Oh, and they have a freshman 7-footer who's playing lights out.
I mean, they're good. They're really good. And when you look forward to what they've got non-conference, there's not much there. There's not a whole lot of potential pitfalls for them. They got Akron at home, who's a top 100 team as of now. They play at Nebraska, I don't have much time for Nebraska. And they have to go across country, I guess less of the country for them.
The fun thing.
Play Arizona State before Big East play starts.
They're
very likely to host Villanova on New Year's Eve undefeated.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Certainly plausible.
That's what I was going to say. The fun thing is we're going to get to see Villanova run into that buzzsaw at CenturyLink
New Year's Eve first. If you play it out, it's not inconceivable that could be like a 2-5 game.
Oh, absolutely.
So that has the potential to be a massive game. But anyway, I think it just shows the arduous task that Xavier has. It's kind of a gauntlet from here on in, and obviously getting Gates and Davis back, boosting their depth a little bit will be big, as will hopefully getting a handle on some of these issues that we've talked about today.
Heavy podcast on numbers tonight.
Yeah, we should probably talk about something else.
We're big sabermetrics guys.
How about Nugent? What do you think of that?
I mean, how can you not get rid of him? How? That's unbelievable. I mean, I guess the season's over anyway, but that's just saying you're not trying.
I went to the game Sunday.
Why would you do that? I'm not sorry. I was going to say sorry, but I'm not.
I mean, I don't know. I'm an old, boring, married guy. Getting out of the house getting out of the house is kind of a big deal. So, I mean, it was kind of fun. We sat at Moorline House in the upstairs bar, had a couple beers, had some onion rings, and then we went to the game. All the highlights of the day happened with in the pregame.
You didn't but tell yeah, me onion was, rings were it was, involved.
It was totally, totally depressing. It was just a completely moribund team. The injuries obviously were big, but they just were hopeless. They played like absolute turd, and there just is no, like, part of the problem I just think is that there's just no, like, verve or any kind of, like, balls, for lack of a better word, to this team. There's no willingness to take risks, and it's just, like, it's just a slog. And you could tell. I think that yesterday was a turning point. You know, Egger and some of the other local guys, they talked about, well, this is the window shutting. Well, I think that's true, but I think also that it was kind of like, I think the fans turned on the Bengals during that game, and I don't really see that being reparable, this season, certainly, and it's possible that this is going to be an ugly situation going forward because Marvin's not making any changes. Brown family ain't making any changes. You've got Adam Jones calling out the fans on Instagram because they were heckling Nugent during warm-ups. I didn't get any of that. And then you've got Vontaze flipping off people in the crowd.
It's a good look.
You know, it just is really not any fun. And now the big hope is that Rex Burkhead can really show what he's got in relief of Giovanni Bernard. I'm not going to hold my breath on that. They may not win it. I mean, they may be. I think they should beat Cleveland, but I don't know that they win another game this year.
I wouldn't matter to me in the slightest if they did or did not. I can't even believe you cared enough to talk that long about it. But I'm glad to hear your rant, and I will say I was thrilled to be at my godson's baptism on Sunday, so I didn't have to watch. I was happy as could be.
Very good. That's very responsible and adult of you for standing up at a baptism.
My soul was fulfilled.
Very good.
I didn't even
cuss at Mike. At least one of us still has one.
Yeah, barely. All right. Unless you have any more sports rants or hot takes, I think that is a good place to leave this one.
No, I mean, you know, we'll delve back into this in a week or two, and hopefully we'll have a little bit better sense of where the Xavier season is headed. But so far, all signs looking good.
Hate week. Hashtag corn sword.
Hashtag right. Corn sword. Yeah, if somebody shows up with a corn sword at the game, I'm gonna be so delighted.
Make sure you tweet it at us. I don't know why it was so damn hard for me to get a Fox Morrissey picture. I didn't get it. God bless the student who sent me that picture of him at the bar. I did not think it was going to be an old fat guy who was at a bar later on. I thought it was a student, so maybe that explains why it was so hard.
Well, that was the Dana's upstairs, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Well, I was thinking it was Dana's, but, you know, I didn't want to make any judgments. But either way, I don't know why it took so long for you guys to get that to me. I totally overestimated my social media reach within the CentOS Center. I thought you would have gotten that to me quicker. I will say that.
Yeah, it's pretty disappointing. I blame myself, though. I was really slow on the uptake. I should have gotten a photo myself, but I think I was just so stunned by the existence of such a thing that it was I was paralyzed for a second.
I wanted like a good, clear picture of the guy so I could use it as the front page picture of my game story. That would have.
Oh my God, that actually reminds me. One of the guys I used to write the blog with. I don't know if you'd want me to say his name on the podcast, but you know who you are. One of his buddies shows up at a Xavier Fordham game. I think 4 or 5 years ago. Wearing a Dante Jackson jersey, and it was either a false mustache or it was an actual mustache, and the dude was just mean mugging the camera during TV timeouts, and it was the funniest thing I've ever seen. I actually used it as the banner on my site for like a month after that.
Oh, that's excellent. You've been listening to another edition of the Dated Victory Podcast, only available on musketeerreport.com. For Dan, I'm Rick. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Northern Iowa, don't at me. Don't at me. Hashtag hate week.